this skewed nature of health access, which is not ideal at all. For us from the Africa CDC side, we encourage universal health care and universal health coverage, both together, so that citizens, wherever they are in a country, can be able to be attended to based on the need they have, not how much money that they can be able to access. But I really see that our leaders have appreciated the need for building good quality infrastructure for healthcare within a country, because times come when you can't be able to be flown out, and whatever needs to be done has to be done within the country. And this pandemic has brought that message home very, 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 very clearly.
Indeed, I can't wait to see the time when the African leaders would see their fellow citizens as equals, so that they can develop the health systems that treat everybody. So they don't. We don't have to keep seeing them go abroad and spend millions of dollars getting treatment in Western capitals. No Western leader comes to a continent to seek medical treatment. And so it's a shame, really. So, Talbot, you know, we are now talking about this new strain, and mostly now in South Africa. What should we know about it, the new coronavirus strain that is spread even to the U.S. right now?
So the number one, this is what we need to know. Number one, viruses like the coronaviruses and even parasites like malaria that our people used to mutate all the time. So this is not new about mutation of new strains and variants with the coronavirus. They do mutate. And number two, is to avoid panic. Normally, when people are panicking, they forget to take the measures that are necessary. We notice there are a lot of panicking among people about new strain of the virus. The one that we're dealing with in South Africa, the B1351, though contagious, but it's not a virulent, it wouldn't kill like Ebola will kill people, though there will be more cases that will bring the healthcare facility to its brink. And so we need to act faster, because when people get sick and there's more hospitalization, then more deaths will occur. So we'll have more cases, but those systems should be set up to deal with that. Another thing is that my colleagues, we were discussing at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health about whether or not, because of the new strain of the virus, we need to worry about the new vaccines that have been produced. For example, the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccines, whether the new strain will have resistance to the vaccines. But that evidence is not shown yet. We know no evidence that the vaccine will not work or protect people against the new variant that we're dealing with. So to reinforce this, number one, viruses do mutate. Number two, we should get the health facilities more stronger because we have more cases. And number three, people should not panic about that.
I'd like to add on to that, please, on the new strains and also the South Africa situation.
Yes, indeed. In fact, as we speak now, we are seeing the South African strain also has been documented in Zambia. Nigeria has documented another slightly different variant as well. And it is an expectation that the viruses, as Talbot is saying, will be changing their nature to try and become, to survive better within the human population. But key here is the same public health measures will be able to be effective for whichever variant of virus we will have, irrespective of whether it is the South African one, the UK one, and as many more countries continue to do full genomic sequencing, I'm quite confident that we will be seeing a few other variants popping up. But all those variants can be effectively controlled by using the same public health measures that we had from the beginning. So if we continue to be disciplined in the way that we approach our social interactions, we can be able to limit whichever variant or virus that comes. And finally on this is to say that as Africa CDC, we are now setting up centers around the continent. We have about 8 around the continent that are doing pathogen genomics to ensure that we are doing genetic studies and doing genetic surveillance. That way we get to know when any mutations are coming through or not. And this we are doing very actively so that it becomes one of the tools that will be available to us, whichever pathogen it will be, whether it is this virus or another one or any bacteria or any other pathogens that may be giving us a headache out there in as far as outbreaks are concerned. It's a very, very key tool in understanding how these pathogens are changing and what we can be able to do to ensure that members of the public are better protected.
Now, Talbot, the early months of last year when this thing broke out, we remember the Madagascar juice, which was touted as possibly, you know, having some therapeutic, you know, value and could prevent people from getting sick or could cure people. You know, some laughed it off, some used it, and some have said, why shouldn't Africa be engaging very vigorously in research when it comes to such issues as this pandemic or any other? Why should Africa wait for Western big companies or for Western countries to come up with vaccines and then they will be on the line to try and get some? And now we know that millions have been scooped out by Western countries, and that's another question that we'll discuss. So, but focus on the area of research and you know, discovery, given that, you know, Africans also have been known to come up with great ideas, right?
Oh, sure, sure. And the thing is, homeopathic, Ayurvedic medicines, traditional medicines, they are encouraged. They are well encouraged. I know the World Health Organization have been pushing that, the West African Health Organization, Africa CDC, and all of the organizations on the continent, the WHO African region, have been pushing the issue of traditional medicine and using herbs and all of that. But the caveat is that it has to go through processes that are documented, that everybody can see, the scientific community can look at, because the standards are the same. There is no one standard for Africa, Europe, and America. We have to go through the rigorous process of research and putting the findings out there in a peer review journal for everybody to look at. And so the issue of R&D have always been underfunded in our R&D, new research and development and therapeutics and all of that, have always been the least on our continent when it comes to putting resources there. So what I would think, we encourage our African governments to put more efforts into resources. What I find against is coming up with things that are not scientifically proven by data, and then running with it for your citizens to have it at helps or treatment, that is completely unconventional.
But Dr. Umar, you know, of course, as Talbot mentions, there's a process, and sometimes this is what complicates matters. But also some have opined that perhaps there is not much confidence in Africans to come up with a solution. And if you're as old as I am, Dr. Umar, you might remember a Dr. Obel in Kenya who did research at the Kenya Medical Research Institute and came up with what he believed to be a cure for HIV and AIDS. But it was dismissed, and for so many reasons, it was never taken up as something that can be perhaps one of the solutions in the toolkit to fight HIV. And way before then, there had been another kind of, you know, some other thing that was developed, especially in Kenya, in Kemri, So here's a question from the CDC standpoint. You know, does Africa have the capacity to do any kind of research that can stand, you know, the standards and can stand, you know, to be counted just like any other findings that we see from other countries, whether it's China or Europe or the United States?
The brain power is present. The experienced professional scientists are present. What is lacking is resources to ensure that the R&D, the research and development part, is actually supported fully from the beginning to the end. And this is what we have encouraged our member states to put aside resources to ensure that our scientists are properly supported to be able to develop things locally. And it is possible. There are examples on the continent that we can be able to cite. And in fact, for those illnesses that are relatively endemic here on the continent, the easiest solutions are going to also come from here on the continent, if we provide our scientists and experts with the resources they need to be able to develop the therapies that will be required. And you know, the big gap is documentation. Africans have for quite a while not been very vigorous in documenting what works so that it can be able to be repeated from one situation to another, from one country to another. That documentation is what we are trying to put infrastructure in place to ensure that it is present. And this is out of what you referred to from Madagascar, but other countries have some products as well. Kenya, Tanzania, Gabon have all come up with some, Mauritania, with some products that need to be properly tested so that we are sure that they are safe and we are sure that they are efficacious. And the standards, as Tolbert is saying, are clear. We don't need to go reinventing the wheel. We just need to make sure that the resources are present so that we get good numbers in as far as you know, trials are concerned, and we show whether a product is working or not. But the big, big gap is enough resources for research and development in Africa, and that needs to be fixed, so that we can be able to start tackling the diseases that we see the most locally and get into that space of developing proper health therapies, proper health products that are going to be able to stand on the same shelf as those that are coming from other parts of the world. We have the brain power. What we need is for governments to start investing aggressively into providing the proper infrastructure and then providing resources for these trials to be conducted from the beginning all the way to the end.
To follow Buttress that vision, Liberia was one of the first countries to prove that to develop a vaccine or do a randomized clinical trial, which is the gold standard for any scientific testing, was done in Liberia in the midst of an emergency. The Ebola outbreak was going on when we were looking for Ebola vaccines, and we did it right there in Liberia with the technology, with the people, in partnership, though, with the National Institute of Health. We developed Ebola vaccines. It was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and you can find how in an emergency setting that a groundbreaking solution can be found for a disease. Today, the Western countries are developing COVID-19 vaccines. It was done right in West Africa, in Liberia, where we did it with Ebola. So the experience, I agree with Ahmed, the technology, the people are there, resources is what lacking.
And the experts are there, the researchers are there. I personally visited the Ifakara Institute of Research in Tanzania. They're doing an amazing job. At the time I went there trying to find some vaccine against malaria, especially among children. And also I've seen what the work in Kenya Medical Research Institute is doing. So the people are there. Some infrastructure is there. I think they need more support from their governments and, if possible, some other international organizations. Well, let's turn to vaccinations. They are underway in the Western nations vigorously at this time. Question is, what's our schedule looking like, Dr. Umar, in Africa for vaccination?
We are estimating that Africa will start vaccinations for COVID-19 towards the end of the first quarter. So sometime in March and early April is when we may be able to start that. And I say this because the path of getting vaccines onto the continent is not as straightforward as it is for countries in the West. We as Africa CDC right now are in a deep discussion with all the vaccine manufacturers so that we can be able to start getting the first doses onto the continent within the first quarter of 2021. Apart from that, we are also working with individual governments in Africa for the infrastructure required for vaccination to be ready. Because if you can have the vaccine, but if you don't take it to vaccination, it is of no use. We want to make sure that when the first doses are coming in, the systems are ready. And then the vaccines are taken all the way down to the health facility where vaccination can then be able to happen. Many times we focus so much on the vaccine, but delivering that vaccine requires a whole system. Indeed, you will need needles, you will need syringes, you will need swabs, you will need a trained personnel. How do you dispose of the needles after you have done what you've done? How do you monitor the individuals who are getting the vaccine so that in case there is any adverse reactions, the healthcare system is ready to be able to take care of that? How do you ensure that the person who got vaccine A will come back after 1 month or 6 weeks to get a second dose of the same vaccine and not another one? So there's a lot of infrastructural issues, logistical issues that need to be put in place before we start vaccination on the continent. But in as far as purchase is concerned, very advanced discussions through the COVAX facility and directly with other manufacturers from different parts of the world who are manufacturing COVID-19 vaccines, so that we can be able to get these vaccines onto the continent within the first quarter of 2021.
And I'm going to ask this to both of you. First, I want to stay with you, Dr. Umar. Are we, to put it bluntly, at the back of the queue, waiting for these vaccines? I mean, you talk about April, somewhere there. Anything can happen between now and then in terms of infections.
I wouldn't say we are at the back of the queue, because remember, for herd immunity to be breached, really we need to do at least 60% of the population. And we are quite confident that we will be within the timeline that is expected. Three months is good. We are not at the back of the queue. There are a few countries that are already ahead because they did purchase these vaccines before the vaccines could even be cleared as successful. So they invested ahead of time, while in our case, our countries are waiting for the successful vaccines to be known, and then we are buying what has already been cleared for use in human beings. So the style is the one that is different, but we are not at the back of the queue. Until every part of the world is vaccinated, then the whole world is still at risk. If you vaccinate only one portion, the mutations we are talking about, the variations we are talking about earlier, will appear. And when they do, and they are significant, then you will find trouble even for those who had been vaccinated initially, if it is the change is big enough. So we must be able to contain the virus in a very rapid way across the globe and within Africa, starting within the first quarter, I think is not too bad. And we are pushing to ensure that when we start, it is going to be consistent for the next 18 months so that we can be able to reach the 60% that we have calculated to be what we need on the continent to reach a comfortable level of immunity.
Tobias, what's your take?
Yeah, on the Africa having access to vaccines and how rapid the number one thing is, the number one good news, Vincent, is that the people of Africa, the upbeat and optimism of acceptance to vaccines is encouraging, because I was looking at a perception survey report on COVID-19 vaccine conducted by AMEX Institution, Africa CDC, and the London Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. 80% of Africans surveyed said they were willing to take the vaccines. If you look at the global north, that number is very, very low. Vaccine perception of hesitancy and refusal is an issue. So on the continent, the people, I feel they are ready of those surveys. That's number one. And number two, individual African countries on the continent who finance vaccines for their people to get inoculated to have the vaccines in their arm, because vaccines, as often said, don't save life. What saves life is vaccination. And it goes with issue of supply chain, issue of logistics, issue of cold chain, storage, training, large-scale communication, community engagement are very, very important in delivering the vaccine. So since Africa is still waiting for the doses to arrive, some of these things are things that government should start doing, putting in place the communication system, sensitizing the people, getting the kind of storage and supply chain. On a global level, I think there is good news, because the World Bank, the other time in October, put up about $20 billion to finance vaccine through the COVAX initiative. COVAX is initiative of WHO, CEPI, and Gavi, and the rest of them. And so the good news, the resources are available to provide ensuring global equity access to COVID-19 vaccines. And I think if the African continent can put us through the Africa CDC and WHO and the African governments to see how to start putting in some orders and don't wait so that we don't be at the bottom of the line, that would be an incredible piece of job that the system needs to do. Like yesterday, I was looking at some of the report. WHO is now put out an announcement to recruit experts for allocating vaccines to developing and low middle income countries. And over 92 countries are in the pipeline to receive vaccines from the COVID initiative. When the allocation is in place, equitable distribution. And again, I will reemphasize what my colleague Amber said. One country with COVID left out of the vaccine supplies immunization, the entire world is not safe. So the rich countries need to look at the poor country to get the vaccine. Equity, wealth should not be a barrier, or wealth, not having wealth should not be a barrier of inoculating people.
We hope for the best. Here is the question I'd like you to answer briefly. What would be the best possible case scenario in Africa 2021, and what's the worst case scenario? And we want to hope for the very best case scenario here.
Let me start by saying that as Africa CDC, we are planning for the worst. While quite clear that looking at what we've done in 2020, we'll probably end up with very close to the best, if not the best. So the worst case scenario will be if this second wave were to be significantly higher in terms of the peak than the first wave. That will be really, really bad.
We will hang on to the best case scenario. Thank you very much. That's our time. I want to thank you very much. And on that note, our distinguished guests are Dr. Ahmed Oguel, Coleman, and Tobias Nyesua. I want to thank our audience for joining our conversation on Straight Talk Africa. Thank you and have a good evening.